Suvas Perkhes, Mishnah Aleph 8:1. In this chapter, it turns its attention to the topic of the woman's nechsim alug, her property she brings into the marriage as what's called usufruct property. I'll explain in a moment, and her ability to sell it. So, here in our first Mishnah, we want to consider if she does sell this property, is that sale binding? Now, the question or the complexity is as follows. When a woman brings any asset into her marriage, so it can come in one of two varieties. It can be called nechse tzon barzel, literally iron sheep property, or nechse malug, literally plucking property. Now, nechse tzon barzel, which is not the topic of our chapter here, or this Mishnah, is where she brings something in, let's say a flock of sheep, and it's written in Ksuba that flock of sheep is appraised to be worth $1 million, and if in the event of the death or divorce, so then she would get $1 million, but the flock of sheep becomes her husband's when they get married in exchange for that $1 million commitment. So the flock isn't hers, and therefore there'd be no thought, and the Mishnah therefore doesn't discuss what would happen if she sold the flock of sheep after she's married, because it's not hers to sell. Of course, such a sale would not be binding. But her nechsim malug, the plucking property, so literally, so that the husband has what are called the usufruct rights. He has the rights to the peros, the output of this property. So if she brings in a flock of sheep, while they're married, the milk and the wool, let's say, for the shearings, are his to dispose of as he sees fit. Even though the sheep themselves and all their, let's say, you know, the flock as a whole goes, that all belongs to her in the event of his death or their divorce. So since it's hers, this flock is hers, it's not written in the Ksuba, the flock, and since it's hers, the question is she allowed to sell it? Now, the complexity is, while it is hers, so long as they're married, he, the husband, has these rights to its output. Okay, so the Mishnah will consider what happens if she does sell it. So there's really three different stages in the life of this marriage. There is the before the erison, meaning there's no connection between him and her. And if she gets, let's say she inherits a rental property from her father, so of course the rent is hers to spend on herself however she wants, and the property is hers to dispose of however she wants. Once she gets to the next stage of marriage, the first stage of marriage, called erison, so now she has a husband, but the husband does not yet have these usufruct rights. He doesn't have rights to the rent yet. The rights to the peros, the output of this property, only kick in after nisuin, the third stage of marriage. So while they're in this intermediate stage of she's in arusa, let's say she's still living at home with her father, or her father, whatever, and she has this real estate that she inherited from whomever. So everyone agrees that she collects the rent every month and she can spend the rent however she wants, because they're not having this full marriage yet, not nisuin, and therefore the husband, although they're legally married, doesn't have any rights whatsoever to the rent. Once they get fully married nisuin, so then he has the right to rent so long as they're married. And in the event of death or divorce, then she takes the rental property back. So our Mishnah says, what happens if she tries to sell that property, that building she got? And the answer is, it depends. When did she get it? Did she get it in the first stage, prior to even erison, in which case it was totally hers? Did she get it in the second stage, in which she was already in arusa, and therefore her husband has like a potential claim, because although he has no rights right now in the output of that property, he will soon after nisuin. There's a third stage. If she got it after nisuin, then of course he has also got a clear legal claim to the cash flows that come from that property, and therefore we'll see that she can't sell it anymore because he has a claim on it. So let's see inside. The Mishnah says, Ha'isha shenafala nechasim, a woman who inherits property. Now the truth is, although it says naflala, which means fell to her, which means inheritance, the same exact rules would apply throughout the Mishnah if she got the property, whatever it is, that whatever the asset is, in any way, meaning she got it as a gift, she found it on the floor, it doesn't matter, it's all the same. The point is, the most common case is she'll inherit this, you know, property from a relative through inheritance. So, achlo nisares, if she gets the inheritance of the rental of the apartment building prior to getting even arus to nisares, to being the first step of marriage in arusa, the kedushin. So then, of course, she's the only person that has claim to it, and therefore it's hers. So modim beisham beis hillel, both beis sham and beis hillel agree, although they'll disagree later on. But for now, they both agree she mocheres venosenes v'kayam. If she would either mocheres sell it or nosenes give it away as a gift, so then the giving of the gifting or the selling is binding because it was hers to give, and there's no one else who has a claim in it whatsoever, and that will be true even. Of course, it's true before she's engaged, before she's in arusa, because there's no one else in the picture. But even after being in arusa, since he has no claim whatsoever on the peiros output yet, and it was her, it's hers entirely. Of course, she could still sell it, and it'll be binding according to everybody. Okay. Later on, it will turn out that if she sold it, if she wants to sell it after nisuin, even though it's totally hers, once they're fully married, he's getting the peiros. So therefore, we'll see lechachila, everyone agrees she shouldn't sell it. It's not right, because now her husband, she's messing up her husband. But everyone will agree that b'di'eved, both Beisil and Beisham will agree, that if she did sell it, the sale is binding, and he can't get it back, because she's the only person who has legal ownership on it. So that's that. We'll see the halach l'maisa, not quite like that, but wait to the end for the halach l'maisa. Now, Naflala Mishinis Arsa, if she only became the owner of this asset, let's say through inheritance, after Erusin. So now, her husband, she has a husband, but they're not living together yet. So her husband has what's called, I'll call a potential claim, right? It's a suffix claim. Maybe he's going to, assuming that they end up going to the next stage of marriage called Nisuin, and she moves in with him, they consummate the marriage, and that they're living together as a couple, so then he will have rights. But that might not happen. There's a possibility it never happens. So right now, when she inherits it as a rusa, he only has like questionable potential rights. And that being the case, there's a machlokus, Beishamai Omrim Timkor. Beishamai say, listen, he doesn't get any rights till Nisuin. Nisuin hasn't happened yet. Therefore, she's free to sell it, and if she sells it, the sale is done, and that's that. But Beis Hillel Omrim Lo Timkor. Beis Hillel say she no longer should sell it. Because really he's got a potential claim and she's like really messing him up. Therefore, she shouldn't do it. But Elu ve'elu modim, both Hillel and Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai both agree. She'im machra, that if she did sell it while prior to Nisuin, even though she only got it as an Arusa, v'nasna, or if she gave it away, then kayam, that sale or that gift is binding and the husband can't undo it because he didn't get claim to it because he didn't yet go to the stage of Nisuin, which is when he gets the Yuzufak rights. Now, on that, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Yehuda says that on that point, of the point of the husband not being able to object or undo her sale after Erisin, but before Nisuin, seems to not make sense. And Amru, the rabbis, said, Lifnei Rabban Gamliel, before the Nasi Rabban Gamliel, Hol v'zacha be'isha. They say, wait a second. This guy already, he made his kinyan by giving her whatever it is, the kesef, and she's now in arusa. So they're bound together in marriage. So since he already acquired his rights as her as a wife, lo yizke b'nechasim, she did not also acquire rights in the property, at least enough rights that he should be able to object to her selling it or undo it if she did sell it. Amar lehem, so Rabban Gamliel says, Ala chadashim anuboshin. Literally, we're embarrassed about the new property. I'll explain in a second what we mean by new. Ela shatem magalgun aleinu esa yeshanim, and you want to also throw into the mix the old property? It's a rhetorical response. Let me explain what's going on over here. According to Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel is not arguing with the halacha. He's just saying, I find this halacha really difficult to understand. He's saying, because on the new property, meaning the property she gets ownership of after she's married, Nisuin, even that anuboshin, we have a hard time explaining why he should be able to object and undo her sale. We're embarrassed about that. Why? Because why should he have any rights to undo her sale? The property is hers. It's nichse miluk. It's her property. So why should he be able to object to that or undo it? And that's puts us in a, so to speak, an awkward position. Rabbi Gamliel is not saying that's not the halacha. He agrees that's the din. That's the din derabbanan. He's just saying he has a hard time understanding why that should be the din derabbanan. Now, where is the starting point of this? You'll recall that all the property is hers. The rabbis said that the husband has an obligation for pidyon, for redemption of his wife, if she's captured, held captive, kidnapped. So he has to redeem her. He can't say, listen, you know, I'll just, you know, cut ties, let her fend for herself. Here's her ksuba, let her, you know, let her deal with her kidnappers herself. He can't do that. He now has to ensure she gets, you know, she gets redeemed, ransomed, recovered. So there was a quid pro quo in exchange for the obligation of him having to redeem her. So now he gets these usufruct rights. That was the setup. Now, the whole point of that was to protect her. And on top of that, the whole situation about redemption from captivity is rather, I mean, if it should happen, God forbid, so then she'll be very happy that she has this, like, this insurance policy, so to speak, with her husband. But it's rather uncommon. So it seems very strange for Gamliel for at least one, if not both of those reasons. First of all, she gives up these, like, rights to him that he should have, you know, usurfact rights of the peris of the property in exchange for being redeemed. I mean, the being redeemed is a rather outlying, unusual scenario. So we shouldn't give him that much rights that he should be able to undo her sale. And on top of that, if the whole point of this obligation was for the sake of the protecting of the wife, you would think, perhaps, but this would be wrong to think, but you would think she should be able to say, listen, I'm prepared to forgo my redemption insurance policy with you, and just I'll sell my property and I'll keep my peros, and if I get captured, I'll redeem myself. Don't worry about it. She can't do that, but we would think, you know, since really it's all to protect her, she should really have the upper hand in these dealings, and she should be able to sell her own property definitively, and this, you know, quid pro quo for redemption shouldn't be able to stop it. So, therefore, again, Rabbi Gamliel says, I have a hard time explaining and living with the idea that after Nisuin, she can't sell her Nechsim Alug. And you want to ask me that even after Erisin, because he has a potential claim, he should be able to undo the sale? I can't live with that. I can't answer you. Okay, so that's no. The answer is no. That's going way too far. No, it's going too far to say that if she sold her property after Nisuin, but after Erisin, but prior to Nisuin, he should be able to undo it. Now, the third possibility is nafala mishenises, if she inherits the property only after nisuin. So now her husband has a certain claim to the usufruct. He definitely has rights to the rent of that property that they inherit. So then elu ve'elu modim, both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree, she'im machra v'nasna, even if she sold it or gave it away, habal motim yad lekuchos, her husband is able to say nothing doing, and I'm taking it back, because I have rights to the rent. Now, in the world of the Mishnah, like up to now, not the Halacha, but according to that, so what we're basically saying, just want to speak out, their Shita would be, it's true that the property is hers, let's say to give away if she wants to, but the husband says, but the use of the property is mine, so long as she's alive. So that would mean that according to this, basically, if she would give it away to a friend, let's say, she gives it away to her best friend, the husband would say, listen, as long as she's alive, you can put your name on the title, but the rent belongs to me, not to you, and I can live in the apartment as I wish, or rent it out as I wish. But when she dies, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would say, okay, at that point, he no longer has usufruct rights, she doesn't need redemption anymore, and therefore, the gift would go to the inheritance, whatever you call it, would go to her best friend to whom she gave it. In other words, there's no inheritance at all. It already belongs to the best friend to whom she gave it, and the husband would not inherit her property. That's how Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would learn. Subsequent to that, they made a takana. They said no, nothing doing. And we'll see by the end of the halacha, the whole thing is turned to his favor greatly. But for now, that's how Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would learn. Now, the Mishnah says, now this is a potentially called a girsa issue here. I mean, the girsa is fine, but there's different versions of the Tanaim exactly what happened. So, achlo nises v'nises, if she got the property, like we're reverting back to the middle stage. if she got this property prior to Nisuin, Vinisis, and then she gets married through Nisuin, Rabban Gamliel Omer, Imachar Vanasna Kayam. Rabban Gamliel says, if she sold it or if she gave it away, then the sale is binding, or the gifting is binding, because when she inherited it, it was prior to Nisuin. Now, if we learn that, it sounds like he's talking about something b'di'evit, Imachar Vanasna, if, not that she could, but if she did, if we learn that it's only b'di'evit after the fact, that it's binding, so really that's going to stick with the halach we said before, like Beis Hillel. He's not really arguing with them, it's just a girsa issue. If you understand that he's saying l'chachila, which is not really much like that, then it'll be another shita. But the pashtus is that Rabbi Gamliel is saying, kind of what we saw before, that if she not that she should l'chachila or may l'chachila, but yeah, but if she sold it, then the sale is binding, assuming that she, even if she sold it after they're married, the suin, provided that she became the owner of it prior to Nisuin when she was just an Arusa. Okay, so maybe it's not a third sheet at all. But on this now we have like the Girsa issue. Instead of Rabbi Yehuda being the one to raise the objection, like why in the world should he, the husband, not be able to object? Now we have Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia, who says, Amru lefnei Rabbi Gamliel. They objected at this point to Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel is, according to this part of the Mishnah, he's the one who's saying this din. And the rabbis, are objecting. And they're objecting, Hol v'zacha be'isha lo yizke b'nechasim, the same exact words again. But now, this version of the story, the machlokasim bis Rabbi Gamliel and the Chacham, wasn't about a woman who's an arusa selling stuff. It's that she's already a nesua selling stuff. Okay? And she's already married. Like she's living with her husband, and she sold something that she acquired when she was an arusa. And they're saying, wait a second, why in the world should she be able to sell it? They're married now. She's in a suah. The husband has a claim. Zacha be'ishal yizka b'nechasim. They're married now. He acquired the wife back when she was in Arusa, so for sure now he should also have rights to the property. Now they're married, and she shouldn't be able to sell it. Amar lahem, the exact same words as before. Allah chadashim anuboshin. It's bad enough. We're embarrassed when it comes to things she receives after she's a full nesua. Why she can't sell them, and if she does, the husband could object. Elishatem megaglin aleinu esa yesharim. You want to ask me about things she became the owner of prior to Nisun when she was in Arusa? She can't sell those. Again, rhetorical response. But the Rabban Gamliel is not backing down on that. Now, therefore, if we sum up the mission we saw before, we basically have three times of three stages. The stuff she inherits before Arusa, before Erison, is hers entirely, of course. And that being the case, everyone agrees that she's allowed to sell them l'chachila to whoever she wants, and she can do that even after she's in Arusa. But if she's already in a Suah, so then she shouldn't sell it. But if she does sell it, then the sale is still binding b'di'evan. Okay? Then the second stage, if she gets the property while she's in Arusa, so the middle stage, so according to Beis Shammai, it's still hers, and the husband hasn't come into the picture yet, as he didn't till Nisuin, and therefore, like he's not going to have to redeem her until Nisuin and so on. So therefore, if she sells them, that's her prerogative, she can sell them l'chadchila, and the sale will be binding as long as she's an Arusa. But Beis Hillel say no. Once she's an Arusa, if she gets it once she's an Arusa, since the husband has a potential claim, she shouldn't be selling it anymore, because potentially the husband's going to be married and then he'll be messed up. But he agrees, he'll agree, that if she did sell it as an Arusa, and if she got it only as an Arusa, then the sale will be binding. If she got it during the Erison period and then she sells it after Nisuin, after they're fully married, so everyone agrees that that's not allowed. She's not allowed to sell it. But since it is hers when she got it, if she did sell it, that sale will be binding, according to Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And then the third stage is if she gets the property after Nisuin, then since the husband has an immediate claim on it, not a potential claim, so therefore everyone agrees that she can't sell it, and even if she does sell it after the fact, but still the husband can overturn it and get the property back, or at least the usufruct, the peros, back. That's how the Mishnah shakes out, as we read it. However, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that subsequent to this discussion, there are more Tanaim who got in the discussion that said that the Rabbi Seinu, the Chachamim of a subsequent generation, they gave the husband more power, and they said that if she sells it during the time that she's in Nesua, she's already married to him, regardless of whether she got it, the, whatever the thing is that she's trying to sell, when they were married as Nesuin or even as Erisin, or even if she got it prior to the Erisin altogether, still the husband can say, no, I'm not letting you sell now that we're married, I have usufruct rights, and he can overturn and that sale and get it back.